This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shah on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Yes, sir. Thursday night football's upon us. Welcome in another edition, Sharp Money. I'm Dustin Sweetelson, hanging out with Amal Shah, who is making me look very underdressed. Downtown Las Vegas at the D. Come by, say hi, buy Amal a water. The joke is it's free. What's going on, Amal?
Not much. How are you?
Oh, not much. We got a big show planned for you today. Coming up in about an hour, we've got Josh Applebaum, VSiN betting analyst, going to look at the market. And there is some movement on this Thursday night football matchup between the Vikings and the Eagles. He'll be all over that for us. Then at 4:15 p.m. Eastern time, Chris Myers checks in, NFL on Fox. You know, he's got the assignment of covering a lot of these rookie quarterbacks right out of the gate for Fox. We'll touch on all of that with him. Trevor Maddich, college football analyst, BYU legend, going to join us later on at 5 p.m. Eastern. And then we'll close up shop. Bottom of the last hour, 5:30 on the East Coast, going to go to Philly. John Jansen, Fox Sports, the gambler. He's a host over there. Get a lay of the land on Eagles and Vikings, because right now, Amal, I walked into today, you know, the usual. Maybe I'll have a bet or two on it. I don't know about the side. I don't know about the total. But all of a sudden, I'm talking myself into a few props here.
What are you thinking about?
So let's go right out of the gate. Right out of the gate, two guys who were avoided week one for Philadelphia.
Yep.
Dallas Goedert, DeAndre Swift. Heard press conferences throughout the week where Nick Sirianni was talking about they need to be more involved in the game. And obviously the offense kind of struggled at times for Philly in New England in week one. So I expect them to make it a point to get them back into the mix. Goedert over 4.5 receptions, a number he has gone over a lot recently in his last, I don't know, like 7-8 games with the Eagles. And then DeAndre Swift. I think DeAndre Swift only had 2 carries in week one. Kenneth Gainwell out for the Eagles this afternoon. I think DeAndre Swift finding the end zone at +160 anytime touchdown or 10-1 for the first touchdown is an interesting bet. Here's why. The Eagles have scored the first touchdown in 8 of their last 9 home games. So that is an interesting number, I think, for you as a live bettor, but also with the potential of DeAndre Swift at the goal line.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to cut his carries in half from last week. He didn't have 2. He only had 1.
Sorry, had one.
He did have 1 reception. But, no, your point is well made. I think he looks to have a bigger game here, and I think they'll get him involved in it a little bit more. That's the other thing. You brought up a good point. Philadelphia has been tremendous coming out of the block at home. In particular, we saw it last year. Dominant fashion for this team. Laying 6 in this one right now, total of, what, 48.5 or 49.5? 49.5, I see.
Yep. It's gone up a point in the last, like, 12, 14 hours.
And, you know, it doesn't come as much of a surprise. Remember last year when these two teams met early in the season, Philadelphia won that game 24-7. They played on September 19th, a low-scoring game. So a year from now, they've got an opportunity, the Vikings, to enact some revenge here. An important game for Minnesota. I'll tell you, Dustin, it seems like the narrative all week has been that Philly's almost like coming off of a loss.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I had to go back and double-check. I'm like, wait, did they win or
lose?
They won.
Exactly. And by the way, and they covered. Even though they probably shouldn't have covered, they still covered.
Absolutely. But it feels like everyone's been talking about Philadelphia like the demise has already occurred and that they lost the football game. They get a good road win. Anytime you can get a road win in the NFL, it's always a good one. So good opportunity for both teams. And it's great to get that Thursday night game early so that way you don't have to worry about it. Your body's much fresher than when you get into week 10, 11, and 12. You know, it's funny. I was thinking about this. I was going over some stuff for Survivor last night, and I was looking. I said, the NFL, they'll never do it, but what they should do is have 2 bye weeks, week 9 and week 10. 16 teams don't play in week 9, and 16 teams don't play in week 10. I mean, you've got buys stretching from September, end of September, or maybe early October, all the way into December. And the advantage of getting it around week 7 or 8 is so much better than when teams get in week 10 or week 4.
Yeah, I'd love to, you know, if I have some time later on in the next couple weeks, do some research on how many Super Bowl winners have bye weeks at certain points in the year, because I do think it does benefit, you know, in certain aspects. That's an interesting point by you. Some pertinent info in case you missed it. Kenneth Gainwell, he's going to be out for Philly tonight with a rib injury. No cornerback James Bradbury. That is a big miss. In concussion protocol, he is still out this week. I don't believe safety Reed Blankenship is playing there in the secondary for Philadelphia. And then Nakobe Dean was put on IR. So those are some big losses for a Philadelphia defense coming in to take on an attack with Kirk Cousins in Minnesota that looks very pass happy year one without Dalvin Cook.
Yeah, absolutely. We saw Dalvin Cook be effective when he got the ball with the Jets on Monday night. You mentioned this team defensively. But Jalen Carter, the first-round pick for the Eagles, was effective. He has a sack in his first game. He's going to try and fill in the void that they lost with Hargrave going to the 49ers. I think this team will be fine overall. The problem is it looks like, big picture-wise, Dallas has improved. San Francisco looks like they're at the same level or better than they were last year. But this is an important game for a couple of reasons for both sides. Minnesota can't start 1-1. You've got to get a road win here against a conference opponent. You're already 0-1 against the Buccaneers. If you go to 0-2, now the things have changed with the 17th game, but we know statistically teams' likelihood of making the postseason in the past in a 16-game schedule was very remote if they started 0-2. Philadelphia is going to have Dallas, and they're going to have pressure from the Cowboys all season long. And again, I mentioned the 49ers. So this is an important conference game if you're Philly and at home. So this is one you want to get and one you need to get.
Yeah, no, and you bring up a good point about Jalen Carter on the D-line. Any thoughts of him maybe having a regression in his second NFL game? I don't think so. Why? Garrett Bradbury, center, is out for Minnesota. Also, left tackle Christian Darrisaw, ankle injury. He's questionable I looked. That offensive line's not good to begin with. When you're going to lose those two guys that they've drafted recently, man, Kirk Cousins is going to be under a lot of pressure from a Philadelphia front. And you mentioned losing Hargrave, but it's still a pass rush that is one of the elite ones in all of the NFL.
Yeah, absolutely right. And I think that's where Philly's going to really be able to make its kind of pay on the defense side of the ball. Fletcher Cox questionable in this one, but you mentioned some of the injuries on the Philadelphia side. To me, the big thing is when I look at this team is, can Minnesota establish a running game? If they can't and they're one-dimensional, even without Bradbury in that secondary, I think it's going to be a real problem for this team going up against guys like Darius Slay and company. This is Philly's game. Look, the 7 was the number. I didn't get the 7. I didn't end up playing this game. I would have liked to have taken Minnesota plus 7. Might still end up taking it at 6. I think it's going to be a one-score game. But I think Philly ekes out a win at the end. I think it'll be much, much closer than it was last year.
Yeah, you mentioned the establishing the run situation for Minnesota right now. Week 1, third most passing yards in the NFL. They had 328. Only 17 rush attempts taking on the Buccaneers. And Kirk Cousins threw the ball 44 times. To me, that is not a recipe for success for Minnesota. I like Kirk Cousins. I'm higher on him than most of them all, but 44 passes for him in a game against Tampa Bay, that's not optimal, especially in this one. It's not a good idea considering this Eagles pass defense was number one in all of football a year ago, and they were first in sacks. That Minnesota O-line has its work cut out for him. I don't see Kirk Cousins having the time to throw the ball 44 times today.
I would agree with you there. If Kirk Cousins is throwing the ball 44 times in this game, Minnesota's going to get dusted, and I think Kirk Cousins might end up getting injured.
Yeah.
Look, Madison's got to be more effective there in the previous game against Tampa. You mentioned it. Just 34 yards rushing in that game for him. And, you know, they got 3 carries out of Ty Chandler for 0 yards. I mean, they're going to have to be more effective in the run game if they're going to have any chance to be competitive. This league is too good that if you're completely one-dimensional, outside of a game or two where you're going to be very successful, most part they're going to be able to take it away from you. We saw that in the Alabama-Texas game. Texas decided we're going to take away the run. You got to beat us with the throw. And eventually it was proven they couldn't do it. And I think it would be a similar situation for the Vikes. If they don't find a way to be at least somewhat effective, they don't have to go run for 200 yards. But man, you've got to get 75 to 80 yards. You've got to have at least a legitimate threat on the ground.
Well, speaking of being on the road, Kirk Cousins' lifetime, 40-40 career record outdoors versus 31-20 in domes, 3-6 in retractable roofs, however you want to categorize that. So Cousins, though, is coming off a loss. Interesting numbers for Kirk Cousins coming off a loss, Amal. 16-10 straight up in his career, 4-0 a year ago. What's interesting about that, these are two teams where I don't like saying luck,
yeah,
but I'd say a lot of things went right for both of these franchises a year ago that saw them go to the playoffs. One, for Philadelphia, I thought the schedule was very good, and also they avoided the injury bug. For the Vikings, what I just mentioned, coming off a loss, 4-0 last year, they never had a 2-game losing streak, but they were a team where they won a lot of close games, and I think 4 or 5 games when they were trailing in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, but I don't think a lot of people have been believers in this Vikings team coming into the season based on the number of different picks we've seen for the NFC North, whether it's Detroit, Green Bay, even some people taking flyers on the Chicago Bears. To me, when I look at this Minnesota team, Kirk Cousins has to be able to take them over the top. Justin Jefferson's going to have a big day. He was tremendous in week number one against Tampa Bay, but can he do it again against a much more competent and a much better pass rush than we saw out of the Buccaneers? So this is an opportunity to really see where the rubber meets the road for this 2023 version of the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, so Kirk Cousins, 30-22 ATS. That's a 58% clip in his career when he's a dog getting 3 points or more. And then one more note on Cousins. You know, the narrative of him on primetime, everyone talks about how he's not good.
Yeah.
It's more Monday night than Thursday night. He's 2-10 straight up career on Monday Night Football. He's not great on Thursdays, but he's a little bit better. 4-5 lifetime straight up on Thursday Night Football.
Yeah, that big 4-4 win percentage, 44% right there. You know, hey, better than the,
it's better than
17%. Yes, 2-10. Right, absolutely. Yeah. But look, again, an important game here for the Vikings. We're going to find out what kind of team they have this year. I'm telling you, if Minnesota loses this game, and when you look at the way the rest of the season plays out, they got the Chargers the following Sunday. That will not be an easy game. Justin Herbert in that dome. You're at Carolina. You got the Chiefs, at the Bears, 49ers, and Packers. I mean, this team, if they were to lose this football game, could potentially be looking at in the first 8 weeks of the season a potential 2-6, maybe 3-5 start.
Well, on the other side for Philly, this could really get the ball rolling here to a hot start. Mm-hmm. You take down Minnesota today at home. You go to Tampa Bay. Then you have the Commanders at home. At Los Angeles, who knows what the Rams look like with the way they get injured lately. Mm-hmm. At the Jets, which is no longer as daunting as it originally seemed. The Commanders again, and then Dallas before the bye. You could walk into that Dallas game with a great record or potentially go into your bye feeling pretty good about the start of the season.
Well, they get the Commanders twice in October on the 1st and the 29th. This is an opportunity for this team. Let's say they get through Minnesota tonight. You're at the Buccaneers on a Monday night spot, so you've got an additional day beyond the three this weekend. So what a great spot for them. Then the Commanders, you mentioned at the Rams, Jets. The Dolphins are the one, but they come to Philadelphia. It is not unrealistic for them to go into that Dallas game at 8-0.
No, not at all. I totally agree with you there. All right, that was laying out Thursday Night Football. We'll touch on it more. I'll get Amal to tell me what I should fire on today because I'm on the fence, but I'm close to pulling the trigger. Coming up next, we're going to go to college football where the rivalry in Colorado is getting hot and heavy. That's on the other side. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Make this football season your best ever by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber. Get full access to everything we do here, including our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand, betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game, plus betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access. Sign up for a VSiN annual subscription, and you'll also get a free copy of Michael Lombardi's new book, Football Done Right. Just use the promo code Lombardi when you sign up. If you would like an autographed copy of Michael's book, just email us. Subscribe at VSiN.com. This is a limited time offer, so sign up today. VSiN.com/subscribe. Sharp Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Dustin Sweetelson alongside Amal Shaw hanging out at the D downtown Las Vegas in a kind of calm before the storm for Thursday Night Football because I anticipate, similar to how Monday was here, I think at the D, as the show goes on, it's going to get more and more crowded.
I would agree with you. Tons of Minnesotans live here in the state of, in the state of Nevada, but in Las Vegas as well. So I expect that. And Philly's been such a public team the last year plus. So it should be exciting.
As a Midwesterner from Ohio, and you talk about how cold it is all winter and you're indoors so much. But do you look at Minnesota and go, that's a different brand of cold and a different brand of winter than you're used to?
Ohio compared to Minnesota is like living in Florida. Okay.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
So any Minnesotans you meet living out here, you're like, yeah, you made the right call.
Yeah. You know what I love? The other thing about having Minnesotans out here is they're the nicest people in the country. I would challenge anybody to find a nicer state than Minnesota.
Really?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Should we, throughout the show, power rank the nicest and meanest states?
Well, I'll tell you right now, number one on the poll is Minnesota. I'll go Oklahoma 2.
Oklahoma?
Oh, yeah. I've spent a lot of time there when I covered the Big 12, and I'm going to tell you, people are incredible. You go to, listen, the reason why I always cheered for Oklahoma in the Red River rivalry is because a lot of my friends went to Texas and they all think they invented football and they don't realize that their program is the most overrated program in sports outside of Michigan. And the fact that people in the state of Oklahoma, it doesn't matter whether from Tulsa, Oklahoma City, other parts, incredibly nice.
Not so nice to the Native Americans, though, back in the day, if we're being low-key.
Oh, Jesus Christ, man. You want to start a holy war here, Doran?
Come on.
Well, you know, why don't we talk about the conflict in the Gaza Strip? Well, whose fault do you think it is?
Well, speaking of conflict that you're on either side of in the state of Colorado.
Yeah.
You've got the Rams and the Buffaloes. Although I don't think it's that split. I think most people are siding with the Buffaloes, especially these days. So that number opened 21. It's up to 24 in this. I don't even know what the rivalry is called between the Colorados.
I didn't even know there was a rivalry officially. I will tell you, the people on the fort are inferior to, or at least they feel like they're viewed inferior in a inferior manner compared to the people at CU.
No. But the line move is interesting because the public continues to back Deion in Colorado. And I guess Jay Norvell, the head coach over at Colorado State's kind of feeling it, and he's a little jealous of all the attention. He was on his coach's show last night and made this statement about his counterpart on the other sideline.
And I sat on with ESPN today, and I don't care if they hear it in Boulder. I told them I took my hat off and I took my glasses off, and I said, when I talk to grown-ups, I take my hat and my glasses off. That's what my mother taught me.
All right, Amal. Look, there are some things Deion does that do bother me at times, but I am such a Deion guy from when I was like 10 years old that I'll never shake it. I'll always back Deion. Jay Norvell not finding ways to poke holes through Deion on the field, trying to take a shot at him during his coach's show about his sunglasses and his hat and being an adult. Overall, it feels like a low blow for a coach who's kind of jealous of the spotlight being on someone else.
I'll tell you what, for me, when I look at this situation with Deion and Jay Norvell, I would not have done what Jay Norvell did.
He poked the bear?
Yeah, no, there's no reason to. You know what? Let your actions and your team's actions speak for themselves on the field on Saturday night in Boulder if you win the game. And here's the other question I would ask Jay Norvell then. So then if you're talking to somebody who's not an adult, let's say they're a 16-year-old kid, you don't have enough respect for them to take off your hat and your glasses, then what are you saying?
No. Well, so from a betting perspective, let me run this by you, and we'll hear from Deion in a second. My initial lean on this game is I wanted to bet Colorado State first half plus 13.5. Reason being, the Buffaloes have gotten off to a pretty slow start their first couple of games, not covering the number in the first half. In fact, they were an underdog in the first game, so I guess they did cover the first game. But their offense has not clicked out of the gates. And we talked to Tim Jenkins, quarterback trainer, earlier in the week, and he said they're adding in new designs every single week, it looks like. So that takes a little bit to get a flow going. It's a rivalry game. Both sides will be juiced up. I wanted to take that first half. Now I'm a little concerned that Deion's going to come out and send a message.
Maybe, but they've gotten off to slow starts, which you pointed out, yesterday in terms of this team offensively. Here's the thing. I think Colorado's been tremendous in the second half of games. Their offense has been flourishing. You know, we've sat there and said, okay, maybe the competition has been as good. But I still think this team is dangerous and don't think they're getting enough credit. I don't understand all of a sudden, though, Jay Norvell acting like Colorado State. This is like some Sonny Lubick team from the mid-90s. They're not that good. Look, maybe they can compete. They can keep it with the number. I'm not betting this game, but I am looking forward to seeing game day is going to be there and what kind of atmosphere and how this team plays for a third consecutive game.
Also, adding to the handicap of the first half bet, Colorado State had a week two bye. Yeah. A week two bye to prepare for Colorado. Don't tell me they don't care about this game. Let's hear from Deion, because Deion was asked about Jay Norvell during his press conference yesterday. That's before Jay Norvell's comments. And just listen to the difference in tone when he talks about Jay Norvell when he was asked about Norvell saying that he was proud there were two black head coaches in this matchup.
What I hear, I haven't met this gentleman, but I hear he's a good man. I know he's a great coach. He has those guys playing hard. I like that. I like that. I'm glad he said that. I like that.
So you got one side, Jay Norvell taking cheap shots about the hat and the glasses. Deion on the other side saying complimentary things about Jay Norvell.
Listen, when you're USC, you don't worry about the Idaho Vandals in recruiting. And that's what Deion Sanders just showed right there. He's prime time. He's at CU. They got things going in the right direction. You're not worried about Colorado State. You're not going after the same player ever. Maybe somebody in the state of Denver.
Sure.
I'm sorry, in the state of Colorado, in the Denver area, you might go after a comparable player. But other than
that's a good point.
You're not worried about what CSU's doing.
Colorado's trying to become a national recruiting program. That's a great call. So is this a rivalry for Deion? Remember, he's been thrown in the mix. He has no ties to the school or the area. Deion was asked about this rivalry with the Rams. Here's what he had to say yesterday.
You got to give me one at a time. Now, you just got me all hyped up about the Nebraska thing. You just bombarded me about that, right? And this tradition, that was tremendous tradition. Now you wanted me to understand about the Rocky Mountain Showdown. So you got to give me some verbiage or some literature on something, you know, just to brief me. But trust me, this isn't my first rodeo when it comes to that. I think the Falcons and the Saints were quite a showdown, as well as playing against the 49ers, as well as the Cowboys, 49ers. I could keep going. Cowboys, Philly, you know, Cowboys, whoever, was always a darn showdown. Baseball as well. So it's always some type of adversity that you have against someone in close proximity of you. Yeah, I had two divorces, which was a heck of a showdown, too.
I had to leave that in there. Amal, can you attest to that? Has going through the battle of the divorce?
No, mine was actually very amicable. I was lucky. So it wasn't contentious. It wasn't a rivalry situation. But I'll tell you this. He's right about one thing. When you're the Dallas Cowboys, when you play at certain programs, when you're Alabama, you're Notre Dame, you're USC, you are everybody's national championship game. Where the Cowboys play 16 games, which are rivalry games, they may not look at a team as a rival, but let me tell you, the fan base is everybody else, they are up and ready for those types of situations.
Yeah, you know, this matchup, I think everyone's watching Colorado every single week, especially as long as they stay undefeated. They're averaging 40.5 points per game. Their first opening matchups at TCU versus Nebraska. At the half, we mentioned them struggling at the half, which is why I'm thinking about CSU plus 13.5 first half bet. 17-10 was the score versus TCU, 13-0 versus Nebraska. Then they started blowing things open. On the other side for Colorado State, they have a quarterback dilemma, Amal. Yeah. Clay Millen was their starter in week one against Washington State, left because he got hurt. Then Braden Fowler Nicolosi came in, and Nicolosi had a pretty good day, 13-20, two touchdowns, one pick. So question what they'll do at quarterback. I have not seen an update.
Yeah, I haven't either yet, and it's going to be interesting. Look, this to me is a game where if you're Colorado State, you got to get off to a fast start. I you know, the one thing I did forget, that this rivalry for a few years was played at Invesco.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was, and I forgot about them. Marcus Houston was at Colorado, okay, and a couple other guys along the way. And CSU was competitive back then. They had the kid with the long hair quarterback. I'm drawing a blank on his name right now. But this is a game, to me, if they can get off to a fast start, they're going to be more competitive, because we've talked about CU getting off to slower starts. This is important and imperative for the Buffaloes to get that crowd involved, get going early on, and get this thing where you want to keep Colorado State away, not offer them an opportunity to be in the game. And the closer it is, the longer it is, the more you get tighter if you're a prohibitive favorite like Colorado.
Sure, sure. The one thing I think in Colorado's favor, though, Amal, is that like they can score in bunches. Like when they start going, it just all rolls downhill. And on the other side for Colorado State, Wazoo dropped a 50 spot on them in week one. So like that defense isn't exactly great, although I do like the Washington State offense.
I do like the Washington State offense, but Shedeur Sanders' mobility and his ability to keep his eyes down the field is comparable to the good receiving core they've got going on. I'll tell you what, man. Watch Travis Hunter play this past Saturday in its entirety. This kid's crazy. An absolute dude.
It's crazy.
But I don't know why we're acting like it's a surprise, right? Because he was the number one player coming out of high school, not at his position, the number one overall player. So we shouldn't be that surprised.
No, it's more appreciative, right? It's crazy how good he is. I'm appreciative of his talents.
You may be, but it's funny. Everyone's acting like Colorado and Deion have never played football. This is the greatest cornerback in the history of football. This is a top 10, top 5 NFL player of all time. It's not like he's some Johnny come lately, one of these stiffs out of John Carroll Mount Union, whatever other school out of Ohio they picked to be a head coach.
Sharp Money, we'll be right back.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Football is back in full swing with another week of epic games. And who's got you covered on the action for every single one of them? DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. New customers can bet $5 on football and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Get in on the NFL Week 2 action with DraftKings Sportsbook. Download the app now and use code SHARP to sign up. New customers can bet just $5 and take home $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code SHARP. The crown is yours. Sharp Money, sitting alongside Amal Shaw. I'm Dustin Sweetelson at the D in downtown Las Vegas with a Thursday night football matchup upon us. There's a couple of college games on the slate tonight. I will be watching Miami for about a quarter against Bethune-Cookman, and then the game will get out of hand, and I'll be able to move on with my night and afternoon.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. I'll tell you what, though. This weekend in college football is horrific, and the NFL schedule is
Yeah. No, what's interesting about the college schedule is next week's fantastic, right? Next week things open up. And we might as well get into this now then, because Notre Dame and Ohio State's next week. And I think the number at 22-1, 20-1, depending on where you shop, I think it's 22 on DraftKings at the moment. Notre Dame to win the national championship, if you think they can beat Ohio State, and you would know better than most as a Buckeye, I think it's an interesting time to get in on them now before that matchup.
Yeah, I would agree with you. By the way, next weekend, sixth top 25 ranked matchups.
You can't beat it.
You can't beat that.
You can't beat it.
I think Notre Dame's got a great shot. However, I will say a couple things that will surprise people. Ohio State right now leads the Big Ten in passing yards. If I told you that, that would come as a surprise.
I would have been shocked. I would have thought Penn State.
Absolutely. Or anybody else,
yeah.
Right? Ohio State, I think the other thing that's getting a little bit underappreciated right now is the Buckeyes' defense. I thought coming into the season they have an elite defense. The big question and concern is the offensive line for the Buckeyes. I love Hartman. Esteen at the tailback position for Notre Dame. I like him a lot. This is a good Notre Dame team. I think they're going to be able to challenge Ohio State more so than they will be able against USC.
And they finally have a quarterback who can go shot for shot if they need to.
Well, let me ask you a quick question off the top of your head. Who are the three best quarterbacks in college football?
In college football, I would go...
I'm not talking NFL or any of that nonsense. Just right now, today, if you could select three quarterbacks to lead your team in college, University of Miami. Yep.
Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
Michael Penix.
Okay.
But that might be system based more than him.
I didn't know. I thought you had coffee. I didn't know you had alcohol in that coffee.
Drake May.
Okay. I don't have.
I know. I'm trying to annoy you. I'm not saying Sam Hartman intentionally.
Well, I don't care if you don't say Sam Hartman. That's fine. Drake May is very, very good. I would have Drake May at four.
Sure.
My top three would be Caleb Williams, Jordan Travis at two, and then Sam Hartman at three.
It's a good
call. Hartman's a tremendous player. I just don't think people realize what he brought to the table. You know, when you look at what he was able to do, him and A.Q. Perry at Wake Forest, they were outstanding there. This is a good, good quarterback. It'll be a challenge for the Irish. They've got Central Michigan on tap today, Dustin. 34, not the game I want to lay the number in, but they should be able to destroy the Chippewas, because I don't think Central Michigan is going to be able to put up more than 13 points. The question is, do you think Notre Dame gets in the mid-40s?
Well, here's the question. It's a look-ahead spot, right?
Yep.
We're one. Notre Dame's a team, look, it went against me last week betting against them with NC State, but they're a team time and time again you would see them in the past. This is mostly before Marcus Freeman got there and under Brian Kelly. They would underachieve against some lesser opponents and let them hang around just a little bit too long and not cover a number. Now, 34 is a little bit different, and it's still a MAC school. You expect Notre Dame to move on here, but I'm just pointing that out because it is something that I've noticed over the past few years, is Notre Dame would let lesser opponents just hang around a little bit too long for my liking.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. The other concern you have defensively for the Chippewas, they give up 42 points to New Hampshire, 31 to Michigan State. Now, Michigan State scored 21 points in the second half. I think this is a game where the Notre Dame defense probably holds the Chips at 10 points or less.
Yes.
I said 13. I'm going to amend that a little. I'm not going to lay 34 here, but one play I would look at potentially, if you can get a number at 17 or below, very specific on that number, 17 or below with Notre Dame in the first half, they got a hell of a kicker, the Irish do.
Yeah.
You get inside the 40-yard line, you are in range in terms of what Notre Dame can do. This team is dangerous. I just don't think people are appreciating the Irish enough. Schrader has got a cannon of a leg.
So we mentioned that Notre Dame and Ohio State's next weekend. As of now, it's a 6-9 matchup. That could change depending on how this weekend goes, though I doubt it does based on the opponents for some of these teams. Look ahead real quick to the rest of, what's that, week 4 in college football. You got UCLA, Utah.
A great game.
Oregon State, Washington State, the final two members of the Pac-12 showdown.
Well, that's going to be a good game.
Florida State, Clemson. Ole Miss, Alabama. Colorado, Oregon. Arkansas, LSU, solid. Texas, Baylor. Iowa, Penn State. And that's about it.
Yeah, that Iowa-Penn State one's going to be interesting. Now, the Nittany Lions host Iowa in that game, so just something that would be a little bit different. Remember, Iowa beat them last year 23-20, or 2 years ago in Iowa City. So an opportunity for some revenge there for Penn State. But, you know, this weekend, you're absolutely right. I was going through the top 25. There's only two teams, I believe, I could be wrong on this one, that have a line that's less than 10 points.
Yeah, it's really tough to find something you love this week. The matchups are ugly, or maybe it's a chance to get creative here. One game where there is revenge, you mentioned it before, is Tennessee and Florida. The Gators are on a 16-2 straight-up run in this rivalry with Tennessee. Remember, it was Peyton Manning who was always held against him not being able to beat Florida. 16-2 last 18 run for Florida versus Tennessee. That's insane. Also, this game is in Gainesville where Florida's won 9 straight.
Yeah, absolutely. The Gators have dominated a majority of this series. You talked about last year, Tennessee getting that 38-33 win on Rocky Top. By the way, Steve Spurrier had one of the great lines of all time when they asked him what Peyton Manning was returning into Tennessee. What did he think? He said, well, you can't spell citrus without UT. And he was absolutely right about that. Four games, by the way, in the top 25 that are single-digit spreads only. This is one of them. I'm going to tell you right now, I would normally, if this were a halfway decent Gator team, it would be a no-brainer, all about the swamp, and you can't back down. But to me, right now, when I look at this Florida team, I'm not sure what they are. I do think, though, Joe Milton and this Tennessee offense is not nearly as good as they were last year. Losing Jalin Hyatt, losing Darnell Wright on that offensive line, and, of course, Hendon Hooker has an impact on
Cedric
this team.
Tillman.
Tillman as well.
So, and for Tennessee, apparently there was a players-only team meeting this week, which is not good in week three of the college football season for guys to be getting together because there's issues. Joe Milton, you mentioned, 66.7% so far through two games, 429 yards, four touchdowns. But that's against Virginia, who had a rough time with James Madison for a while last weekend, and Austin Peay. Like, these are lesser opponents that Tennessee was just rolling over a year ago. So they're completely untested. So I think that's one thing that's interesting. Also, Billy Napier, did you know this? At Florida, he's 5-2 against the spread as an underdog, with Oregon State and Utah in week one as the lone two where he lost as an underdog.
Yeah, the Oregon State game, they didn't have a ton of their guys. They absolutely got destroyed in that game last year in the bowl game in Los Angeles, I think it was. But to me, right now, can Graham Mertz play as well as he did against McNeese State? I don't think he's going to have to go 14 for 17, but he's got to be effective, not turn the football over. If he can do that, they'll be fine. I'm just not sold on this Gator team. Montrell Johnson's going to have a big day on the ground here. I didn't play this game. I'll tell you right now, I have not played a single game this weekend. And for me, I'm kind of seeing probably go in play or maybe some first halves here. But if you're going to play this game, if you're down in the swamp on Saturday night, you got to take the Gators in the 6.5. There's no way you can lay Rocky Top on the road in this spot.
Adding to that, Napier, 17-6-1 ATS as an underdog in his career. And he's won 10 out of 24 tries outright as an underdog. So it's just one thing to watch. I'm not saying back him because of the trend. Trends, I've lost and won on as many trends equally. Like, it doesn't just work out that way. But this is a situation for me where I think Tennessee is a little out of sync on offense. They haven't fine-tuned where they're at. I would rather get in, I know it's a short number, on Florida in the first half plus 3.5 because of the rust, because of the tough environment for them trying to get their offense into a flow. I can see Tennessee covering that 3.5 in the first half versus the second half. If Tennessee somehow starts scoring, I do not believe in this Florida offense to be able to hang.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think it'll be tough. You bring up a good point about the crowd noise. I'll tell you one thing. If you've never been down to Florida Field, it is one of the largest places at Ben Hill Griffin Stadium. It's unbelievable. You can't hear yourself thinking there. And another thing why this is such an important game for Tennessee, if they lose this game, they get UTSA next week, won't be an easy game. But then they've got South Carolina, a bye, A&M. And then, of course, the third Saturday in October is always Bama. And then Kentucky. So this is an important game. They could potentially go into the matchup against Alabama undefeated.
Yep.
Or they could be looking at potentially two or three losses.
Yeah, no, this is a crazy situation for Florida, by the way. Brad Powers had a great tweet. Going back to 1976, Tennessee's never been more than a field goal favorite down in the swamp. 1993, Tennessee was laying a point at Florida. 2015, Tennessee was pick'em at Florida. So we're going back to 1976, 2015.
Okay. 93, they lost the game. That was Danny Werfel.
They lost 41-34.
Yeah, Danny Werfel, he won four straight SEC titles. That was the start of the run.
They also lost the pick'em in 15, 28-27.
Listen, the Gators have dominated this series. Florida's been
it's a tough place to play, man.
It's not just that it's a tough place to play. When they were playing these games against Florida, Florida was one of the two or three top teams in college football in the 90s, and when Urban had that run in two titles in 4 years.
No, they've had absolutely dominant runs. So, look, you haven't placed a lot of bets, but that's one you're definitely watching this weekend.
You kidding me? This is a game that I never miss.
Yeah.
Florida-Tennessee, you kidding? Come on.
A guy hoping not to miss with a play on Thursday Night Football is going to join us next. It's Josh Applebaum. We'll look at that and more. VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Are you looking to be a better? Of course you are, and tens of thousands of people have already turned to Juice Reel to do so. That's Juice, R-E-E-L, in the App Store. Juice Reel is not a sports book, it's a tool, and it's going to help you beat the books. Juice Reel connects all of your sports betting accounts into one app, loads all of your betting history, and gives you an analytical edge backed by nearly $1 billion in bets from sports bettors in all 50 states. Use the data to follow the winners and fade the losers. Don't place another bet until you've downloaded this revolutionary sports betting tool. It's called Juice Reel. That's juice like orange juice. Reel, R-E-E-L. It's absolutely free. Download Juice Reel to your iPhone or Android device today and become a better. Welcome back to the program. Sharp Money, Dustin Sweetelson hanging out with Amal Shaw. Got you until 6 p.m. on the East Coast. In about 30 minutes, we'll get a market report from our own Josh Applebaum, host of Daily VSiN Morning Bets and the Market Insights podcast. He's all over the market moves. There's been some line moves on this Minnesota-Philly Thursday Night Football from 7.5 down to 6.5 and now 6 on DraftKings and over at Circa.
Yeah, you know what? To me, this is a game where if you had that opportunity to grab the 7, I'm mad I missed that one. Would have taken the Vikings here.
Yeah, you know, I think that's one of the things getting back into our football routine, Amal. Like, that's the one thing I keep forgetting is, like, see the number, like the number, just bet it there that day, that moment you see it, because it's not, you can't be promised that it's going to be there 2 days later.
I think it's a great point you bring up, because so many times you can anticipate where the number is going. It was, I think, a high watermark might have been 7.5. I could be wrong, but to me, you did not expect it to get to 7.5 or 8, right? No. Like, let's say it wasn't ever going to 8.
It was only going to get shorter.
Exactly. And so I think certain times you can anticipate, even if you're not an experienced bettor, you have an idea and understanding of which way the number is going to move for the most part, especially an underdog. Minnesota didn't look great. Philadelphia didn't look great.
Well, Minnesota didn't look great either.
Yeah, they didn't either. But, you know, we were talking about this yesterday. So much of what we've reacted to this week, particularly me, I've been kind of hyperbolic on some of these things, like, oh, this team's going
to
go.
You have to check yourself a little bit.
No, but I just feel like sometimes you got to react based on what you see and what you saw. I don't get the notion that when you look at certain teams, people are like, oh, this team's better. And this is like the whole world seemed to be on Pittsburgh, right?
So that was the team I was going to bring up to you, that everyone's saying, don't overreact on Pittsburgh. Like, we should all of a sudden trust Kenny Pickett.
No, it's not even that. But here's my question. Why were we overreacting on what San Francisco was?
Fair. Less about Pittsburgh, more about how good the Niners are.
They were dominant.
They were killers.
Based on what we saw on Sunday, if you were to power rate teams just based on what you saw visually, forget everything else, injuries, schedule, all that nonsense, the San Francisco 49ers, without question, look like the best team.
Especially considering on the road in Pittsburgh, where regardless of the roster, that's always an impossible place to play. Extra time for a guy like Mike Tomlin to prepare for you. Brock Purdy coming off of an injury in the offseason where we thought he might potentially be out for most of the season, needing surgery, avoids the surgery. Brock Purdy looks fantastic. You're absolutely right.
And the other thing is, my question to you, a Super Giants fan, why aren't you sitting there leading the charge to fire Brian Daboll? I mean, they scored 0 points.
Well, because I trust Brian Daboll more than I trust the quarterback that the Giants have right now.
Yeah, that was a mistake. I'm telling you right now, there are certain calls I made that have been correct. Willie Taggart was never going to last 3 years at Florida State. I'm going to tell you right now, this signing of Daniel Jones, not based on week one, was a mistake. They signed him based on the running performance against the Minnesota Vikings last year. It was an absolute joke and a mistake by the New York Giants. They're going to pay the price for it. Daniel Jones is exactly who you thought he was, a below average quarterback who is never going to lead you to what you need to, which is the Lombardi Trophy.
I still think the assessment on Daniel Jones is still a TBD all these years later. I still think the offensive line is so bad. Even that first drive where they were cooking on Sunday Night Football against the Cowboys, Amal, the offensive line was all Daniel Jones having to make up for the fact that he has no protection. He's never had a clean pocket to work with. This is going back to year one, day one, when he stepped in for Eli.
I don't disagree with you, dude. They don't have an elite offensive line. With that being said, though, when you look at Daniel Jones, what's the best he can be? A top 12 quarterback? I don't even think he can be that.
So this is a fair point. I think people go into paying their quarterbacks because is he a franchise quarterback? Well, how do we define that? Is he a legit starter in the NFL is how a lot of people define it. You're kind of convincing me in the last few days
It's no longer that. It's can we win a Super Bowl with him? That's the only thing that matters.
Look, everyone and people in, who are Giants fans in the kind of on the Jersey side towards Philly, and they know this with Sam Hinkie and the Philadelphia 76ers, right? Everyone's criticizing him for tanking. They drafted Embiid, Ben Simmons, and Markelle Fultz. It's unfortunate Ben Simmons turned out to be softer than toilet paper and Markelle Fultz couldn't play, but the bottom line is that's actually the prudent move. If you are not in a position to win a Super Bowl, and you're in the greatest business ever where it's strictly results only, yes, right? Like in other businesses, you can kind of build up,
There's no middle.
Correct.
You're either winning or you're losing. There should be nothing. You never want to be in the middle.
That's exactly right. And the Giants are just that. They're in the middle. The Giants are somewhere between 10 and 16 in the National Football League.
And people got hyped up because they overachieved against an easy schedule where a lot of things went right for them, and they won close games because of some specific situations, like I think early week one with Tennessee, the way Dable handed that game. He absolutely outcoached Vrabel in week one. They were able to walk away with a win. There were so many moments, the Packers game in London, right? So many key moments for the Giants where you're like, huh, they walked away with a win in that game. That's amazing. We weren't factoring that in. We thought it was going to be a rebuilding year, and maybe the reaction paying Jones, to your point, is a little unjustified because it was kind of a lucky season.
You know, look, I understand the argument. You can't go get anybody off the street in the NFL. It's not like other sports where you might be able to find somebody that you can plug and play in a situation. However, if you don't have the franchise quarterback, you should always be looking to get that person. Think about this. If you took Patrick Mahomes off the Kansas City Chiefs and you put Daniel Jones there, what's their record? 6-11?
Well, do you think also the draft class played a role in it?
In what sense?
Like, they paid him because they weren't going to be able to draft someone. They didn't tank last year because this wasn't the draft class. Like, everyone's waiting for Caleb Williams and down the road and looking at it. It wasn't like a great quarterback draft class.
No, but I disagree with you on the notion that you're waiting for Caleb Williams because only one team can get Caleb Williams.
No, no, I know, but they're go for it because, you know, the situation in front of you is easier to navigate than what could be potentially on the other side of drafting a quarterback.
That's fair, but here's the thing I would make the point. Look, you looked at Daniel Jones, where he got you in the postseason, you absolutely get destroyed. I mean, straight up crushed against the Eagles.
A lot of teams got destroyed by the Eagles.
No, but the Giants were completely outclassed. You looked at them in that matchup and you go, they don't even belong in the same field with the Philadelphia Eagles. My point is, you look at Daniel Jones, you go, listen, we can't pay this guy 4 years and $160 million with $80 million
guaranteed. But they're not going to. They're going to pay him two, and if it doesn't work, they're going to walk away.
Maybe, but all I'm saying is if you don't have your guy, like there's probably right now in the National Football League, when I'm looking around, Tua's a guy for me in Miami, Patriots, the AFC North. I'm still higher on Kenny Pickett than you are. I think all four teams are fine with their quarterback situation. Jacksonville's fine. Houston and the Colts. My point is, even if you don't have the guy on your roster right now, you should always be working and looking towards getting that guy.
Sure.
Because I don't think that he is not on a level. He's not even, his ceiling is not Eli Manning's basement.
No, you're right. No, you're right. And it was one of those deals as a Giants fan. I thought, you know, Joe Shane's made a lot of smart decisions as the GM of the Giants so far, and Brian Daboll has proven in one season to be a pretty good tactician when it comes to game plans. If they believed in him, I was willing to believe in him. We'll see how the rest of the season shows up. So that means you are not confident laying four on the road with the Giants this week at Arizona.
Well, I was going over the Survivor picks, and I kind of narrowed it down to three teams.
And that was the only road team that you were thinking about.
That is correct. And I got to tell you, I said, man, this guy, I don't know. I don't trust him enough.
If he doesn't use his legs, they don't have a chance. He always has to use his legs.
Yeah, and also, he's not a guy that takes shots down the field.
No, I don't think he has the arm strength to do it. You know who he compares to? And this is maybe proving your point of why you don't pay him. To me, he's Case Keenum. I've always viewed him as Case Keenum. Like, in between starter and backup, not a super overpowering arm. Obviously, he's more athletic than Keenum because he can run.
Yeah.
And the quarterback position's a little bit different. But, like, he can't make those deep shot throws down the field when you need him to.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And, you know, I don't know if I would necessarily sign off on that comparison. But regardless, I just don't see him being a guy that can help you elevate your program enough. Look, to me, when I look at the guys who can help you win a Super Bowl but are at the bottom of that tier, Dak Prescott, one of those kinds of guys.
You know, he's not even Derek Carr.
Right.
Who gets absolutely crushed by people.
Exactly. I mean, you look at, I think Dallas is okay. Philly's got their guy. You know, whether Fields turns into the guy or not, we'll find out within the end of this season. But you look at some of these other teams, Carolina, Bryce Young, they've got their guy for the next 3 years. If he's the guy, then you'll eventually have him for 10 years. That's what I think you have to look at. Are guys, can they help you win a Super Bowl based on the way your team is constructed? If you add a few pieces over the next 12 to 36 months, I don't see the Giants, unless they add, Aaron Donald and, Nick Bosa type of players, that they're going to be able to win with Daniel Jones.
No, I get it. I just think the mindset when they signed him was we captured lightning in a bottle last year, first year with Daboll and the new regime. Don't lose Saquon. Don't lose Daniel. Go for it for 2 years. Saquon's going to be gone after this year, most likely. I don't think they're franchising him again.
Wait till you see how bad Daniel Jones is then.
And then that's when they walk away from Daniel and we start over from scratch.
Look, don't make the mistake the Seattle Seahawks have made and that people are going to make on betting the Seahawks. You think because they were supposed to be a 5-win team last year, now all of a sudden they're a playoff caliber team in people's estimation. And now this team thinks they are... Geno Smith is... There's a reason why Geno Smith was on 5 teams in 6 seasons.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's what I was thinking mindset-wise. I'm thinking what the front office was thinking.
Hey, there's a lot of dumb people in front offices.
Speaking of them, one of them is the Chicago Bears. We're going to talk about them. And can Justin Fields bounce back on the road this week after a subpar week one? That's on the other side of Sharp Money. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.